I did want to ask a question though. I mean, maybe Annie's already answered it, the sliding door moment. But what was your lowest point, or what was the point where you were like, for you on the walk?
Yeah, I would have to say it was when we kind of parted ways. So, like, we get to Manly, like, you guys were at, like got an Uber back because you literally, again, like, I can't stress enough, Annie was literally the MVP. Like, you walk away with the gold medal. We were all saying when we were doing the North Head section that there is nothing we could do to, like, be more impressive than what you've done.
Oh.
It was wild.
Thank you.
And so we're walking up the North Head Loop, and I think we'd stopped in Manly for, like, 15, 20 minutes, just cooling down, making sure you guys were sweet.
Before I threw up and passed out.
Literally. And then
passed out, then threw up.
Sorry, wrong order.
So we keep going, and, like, it was obviously hard physically just because I'd stopped, so my muscles and everything were cold, and just getting back into the rhythm. But once we were in it, it was good. I would say the lowest part mentally was we were at the North Head Loop walking, and there's just wind blowing in our face, and it started raining. It's like really, really dark. No one's saying a word. Everyone is just there doing it. There was a part where I'm like, man, for the whole day, I've been saying to myself, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And I genuinely meant that. But there was a moment in there, just a slither, where I was like, fuck, like, I want to be in bed.
Yeah.
I want to be in bed. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, how do you get to bed? Like, walking. Like, that's how you're going to get there, because you told yourself you're finishing this at all costs. So the only way I'm going to get to bed faster is by continuing walking. So again, it's just flipping that to, like, I want to be in bed to, okay, how can I get to bed? Being practical about it. So that for me was probably the lowest part. But again, I love those moments. I seek those moments out because I want to know what I'm made of. And that's where I get the most growth, is in the lowest.
I think that's what was most impressive. Like, once again, my Harbour Bridge was my mental goal. After that, it was like, all right, I'm getting to Manly Wharf. Like, that was the next one. And then I think it says a lot about the body that when I got there, I then completely collapsed because my body was like, no, 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 you're done. Like, you're finished. I think the thing that was most impressive to me was that even though we were done and like, nah, you all then stood up and was like, all right, let's finish this. And I remember I was so much like, I was so proud, and I was like in so much, I was just in awe, in like delirious awe.
Yeah.
But I was just like, wow, that you're out is here. You're at Manly. You are at the wharf. You're at a road where you can get a car home, yet you're about to slog another, what, 10K?
Yeah, it was about 10, 12K, I think. It took us like 2.5 hours.
You're about to slog in the dark, in the rain. That to me was just like the most impressive thing. Because you had the option to leave and to finish.
I think it's such like a boys moment though, where it's like, we said we're going to do 80. We've all like held ourselves just like, no, we're going to do it. Like, you're just hyping each other up for the sake of it, which is, you know, kind of can be quite toxic, but used in the right way, it can be incredible. I think, because that's always, because I know, because yeah, she's right. There was an easy out. Just like, all right, we're here. We've made it to Manly. There's still on the walk technically to hit the 80 kilometers. There's another 10. We could stop here, but we said we're going to do the 80. And yeah, it's such a good point, because it goes back to the exit things we're talking about. You know, when the exits are there, do you take it?
Yeah, and it's also not only like just enduring the hardship, but like, how can you thrive in that? Like, David Goggins talks about it when he was in Bud's training, like training to be a Navy SEAL, and they were doing like the boat tosses, and like everyone's at their lowest. This was kind of like the breaking point for where everyone's meant to break. And just then in that moment, he's like started yelling like, can't hurt boat to crew. And his whole boat crew just started yelling and chanting that, and they were throwing the boat even higher and like just more energetic. So I'm always thinking about that in those moments. I said it on the North Head Loop at one point. I was like, can hurt boat crew too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just...
I was going to say, my favorite series I've read, fantasy series, is called The Stormlight Archive. You should definitely read it. But the main character, it's funny. I always compare myself to fantasy characters, even though they're not real. Like, this guy goes through, like, the main character, Kaladin, goes through the worst possible thing. And I'm always like, if he can get through that, I can get through this. He's not real. He's not real, but I still compare myself. And he ends up killing this guy, and then someone takes credit for it, and he becomes a slave. And they put him into this thing called a bridge crew. And basically, when they go to war, which is like all the time, they're always fighting this battle, they have to get their soldiers across. So they have a crew of members that just carry the bridges and run across. And while they're running with this bridge, which is incredibly heavy, they're sprinting. They're getting shot at by arrows, and slowly their members are dropping off, which means the weight starts to get added on. And they just do this until people, they just keep dying. And so they're basically just dying. And he gets to his lowest point. And there's a point where he stands at a cliff and he's about to kill himself. And it's like complete rock bottom. And then, you know, without going to do too much details, he decides not to. And he ends up building his whole bridge crew up. They're all depressed and he brings them up and they start training outside of hours. He starts coming up with strategies and they become Bridge 5, which is now like known around the world that they're in as like Boat 2, Bridge 5, as being the crew that could get through that and go through all this stuff. And yeah, it really just shows like everything we've been talking about, just flipping it. He flipped a crazy thing. He's a fictional character. Goggins is a real person. He flipped the crazy thing. But you'll hear 100% stories like this all around the world.
It's just whatever you tell yourself to get through. Because at the end of the day, like all you're trying to do is get from A to B. So whatever you need to tell yourself in between A and B, like you tell yourself that and then you're going to get there eventually.
Yeah.
And I think another thing as well was like, how did you guys find your cognitive function depleted over the course of the day? Like your ability to think, make decisions, process things.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think mine did.
Wow, that's impressive.
I think I was like, obviously towards, especially like the last 4 or 5 kilometers, I was just like limping, like behind Annie. And I was like, so physically for me, I think cause I had a lot more physical problems. The mental was less, I don't know. I'm not wording it right, but
you felt like the physical was overruling.
Yeah. I was just focusing on like, just I can just get through the physical, which means I wasn't even worrying about mental. Yeah, so like towards the end, like, and then it was honestly the craziest part mentally for me was organizing Annie at the end, because she passed out and I was like, shit, what do I do? Like, do I call the ambulance? And then she threw up, and as she's throwing up, the Uber was calling me saying the Uber's here, and I just had my food arrive. So I was like wolfing down this burger, trying to just, because I needed food in me.
Yeah.
So I was like scoffing this down while Annie's like going like this, and I'm just like trying to grab her to make sure she's not falling. And then I was like, shit, I'll be there in 5 minutes on the Uber. Oh, and then as we're walking there, Annie's like shivering, and I've got my jacket on. I was like, do you want my jacket? And she's like, no, the car's right there. And then these girls are like looking at me like I'm some like asshole guy. Who's not, they're just like watching me like this. I'm like, no, the car's right there. I'm just like, it's okay. I don't have time to explain this. And so like, crazy enough, that was probably it. But yeah, I think because I was just focusing on the mental. The physical. I wasn't like mentally depleted. Obviously, I was tired, but I wasn't like, not the same state as like Annie.
I went to a mental state I've never experienced before, which once again was after Spitbridge. You asked about my low. That was my low. That 15Ks was just all low.
Like yeah, that was my low as well.
There wasn't a high. So I couldn't think.
It wasn't a high.
I didn't have the ability to process what was happening. The only thing I could focus on was one step. I was in searing pain. I lost track of distance, of time. At times, I forgot the people standing next to me. I lost the fact that Dale was there and that Josh was there. And then I'd kind of come to and I'd be like, are you guys all right? Like, are you there? I had this like mental willpower that just persisted of like, keep going. I don't know where it came from, but it was there. But the one thing that saved me was my breath. When I found my rhythm in my breath, my pain went away. And although my body was exhausted, I was able to walk. And every time I lost my breath or I lost my rhythm, searing pain in my hip, my feet were sore, my negative thoughts came back, and I once again fell into the rhythm of my breath. That saved me. Like, I've done Wim Hof, as you know, as you have as well, for a long time. And I've met Wim Hof. I'll just throw that one in there for you suckers. I've met Wim Hof, and I've practiced his breath work for a very long time. And the work that I do is all about the power of the breath and controlling the diaphragm. But I very naively never thought about how to apply it to physical pursuits. Because normally for me, the association is in calming nerves and in calming the body and in calming the mind. And so, to me, thinking back in that moment, it's literally a miracle how I finished. I couldn't walk. I could not walk. I was in so much pain. I couldn't think. I was exhausted. I was so drained. And yet I just kept going. And I think in that moment, like, I think my breath saved me even when I didn't have any cognitive kind of function.
Yeah. And it was wild to witness that firsthand. So as we're walking along, just to set the scene, like, we're walking the Spit to Manly, that section, everyone's kind of scattered. It's Dale, Annie, and myself. Annie's in this delirious
Josh
state.
Also stayed behind, by the way, which was just the sweetest thing ever. I think he knew I was in trouble. So we just, how long did you wait?
5 minutes or so. I don't know. It was, I don't really know what time was then.
I'll give you an idea. Like, because when we hit the Spit Bridge, I was like I was doing quite well.
Yeah.
But I knew the pain was going to come back because I had some drugs.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I just gunned it. I put my headphones in, I put a podcast on.
Yeah.
And I just like, I was going so fast. I was like half running this thing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I got like, I thought I was quite, I thought I was like almost there. And I was like, I was pretty sure as my knee pain was coming back, I was like, I don't think I'll be able to do the last 10Ks. That's probably irresponsible. And I'll actually injure myself. Mm. And I was like, all right, well, I don't want to finish this by myself. So I was like, I'll see, I'll wait for Annie and Josh and Dale and stuff. I'm not even kidding. I think I laid there for like half an hour waiting. Yeah. I fell asleep.
Wow.
And then that was bad because I was so cold. And that's when I started limping. That was like where I got real bad.
That's where the pain comes in.
Yeah. And then I heard like a torch and it was just like Annie holding on to like Josh on one hand, yeah. Dale on the other, just kind of like.
No, I was a long way behind. And just before you set the scene, like Dale was by my side that entire time. Like he did not leave me.
Yeah, props to Dale.
Even though, props to you, babe. Even though he was far more physically fit and was willing to walk and was willing to finish, he could have finished the evening so much earlier, but he stayed to keep me going. And then the fact that you stayed, like, what time did you guys finish the walk? Like 11:30, 12 o'clock?
Yeah, it was like pretty much 12, like 10 to 12.
So I'm going to argue, and I take this, and if I hadn't slowed down the team so much, you would have finished so much earlier. So the fact that you stayed like to help me, it said so much and it meant so much because I don't think I could have completed it without you guys. Like you were just such a crutch for me.
I appreciate that. But that, like there's also a selfish intent in that because like, again, I'm just a selfish pig. No, honestly, like there's a part that's like, I just want more. Like I want to grind more. I want more pain. And I know the longer I'm out here, the harder it's going to get for me. So
wow.
As much as like...
So you don't give a shit about me.
No. The driving factor is like, I want to see Annie get through this. Yeah, like no. I want to make sure she's alive and okay for starters. Yeah, obviously, that's the motive.
Yeah.
But there's a part that's like, okay, like this is just a challenge. And again, maybe it's just how I switch it in my mind. Maybe I really didn't want to be out there for longer. Mm. But I just tell myself that no, like this is only going to be better for me. So like I was walking with Pat and Finn and then Byron was far ahead. And then I was like, boys, I'm going to hang back. Like, I don't know. I need to make sure Annie and Dale are sweet. They go. And then I'm waiting there. See you guys come. And in those like 5 minutes or so that I was waiting, it's wild how your mind starts to play tricks on you. Because I'm now thinking of like, my phone was on 1%. My portable charger was dead. I knew at all costs I was finishing. And I knew Pat and Finn were finishing at all costs as well. And I'm like, man, like, how am I going to message them to tell me to wait? Because we didn't talk about that. Like, freaking out. And then I'm like, what if Dale and Annie got lost and they're walking on the road?
I was thinking about that as well. What if they
just stopped walking? I was like, what if I wait here for 40 minutes and they don't come? Like all these thoughts are just running through my mind. I'm like, right, you need to calm down, man. Like, so I'm very practical. I'm like, right, looking at my watch, I've been here for 3 minutes now. Like knowing that when it gets to a point, because in those moments you can wait and it can end up being half an hour and you're like,
you don't even realize. Because I was waiting half an hour.
Mm.
I was like, because my phone was dead. I had nothing. I was just like, I turned off my light and I stared at the stars for like 30 minutes. And I was just like, and I think I drifted off a bit and I was just trying not to, because I had those thoughts. I was like, what if they pulled out and they went back and I'm just waiting here like a dickhead.
Mm.
And I'm just going to sit here.
I didn't even think of that from your perspective.
Dude, I was like honestly half an hour or something. I was like, man, can they be this far behind? That's I was like.
Real thoughts.
I think that also just for people listening gives perspective of how crippled I was. I could barely walk. That's why I was so slow.
Yeah. So like you guys come, I'm like, oh, phew, they're here. We're good now. So as we're walking, I'm just really starting to like observe the situation and see how like crippled you are. See what kind of state Dale is in. And I'm like, right, cool. Like Dale's pretty with it, but also I can't just say that he's fine because he's been walking for 17 hours. Like
I think I'll speak on his behalf just quickly. I think Dale sacrificed all of his pain and all of his worries to make sure that I got through. Like he was so there and present just for me that whole time. Like I never heard him complain about anything about him the whole time.
Yeah, he did amazing.
Manly. Legend, Dale.
Oh,
legend.
I mean, it's totally true. I've experienced that a lot. When if you're with anyone who's not as fit or not as ready for it, you almost have to level up.
Are you saying I'm not as fit?
Yes, definitely.
See my muscles?
Definitely. Like, because I did it like with my sister or my brother, like I guess being an older sibling, it was like always had to do that or hanging around people. It's very rare, which it was rare to be like Josh and stuff who are much more fitted, endurance stuff. It was quite refreshing actually.
Mm.
I've found because of the people I hang around with originally in school and stuff, I was often one of the fitter ones, which means you do have to, it's almost cool. It levels you up a bit because you can't afford.
Yeah.
It's like Dale couldn't afford to just sit there and be in pain or whatever. He couldn't afford to.
He had to have the strength, because the moment he showed any glimmer of weakness mentally, that again allows you to be like, okay, like,
or anyone.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. So it's so important to be strong. So like, we meet up with you and I'm like, right, like I just need to be in this situation. And it's wild. All my focus was on you. All my pain went away. I was now no longer thinking about like, so my shins, this is what I mean. Feet.
You have to level up in order to help someone, which is actually a really cool thing.
Yeah. And it was beautiful to be a part of. And it's crazy how, even though you were like literally unable to stand on your own two feet and support yourself in that way. Even though you were unable to like support your body on your own two feet, there were moments where like the track was only wide enough, like two people really. So I was like kind of half in the bush walking and I would like trip on a rock or so. Mm. And like I was holding your hand and you would squeeze my hand to like stop me from falling, which is, I still can't get over the fact that you were able to do that. Like, you're unable to look after yourself, yet you still have this like innate just draw to make sure somebody else is okay. Wild. Like, seriously impressive.
Thank you. Well, obviously, I mean, to me, it was so important that you guys got through it just as much as like I got through it. But no, I wanted you guys to be okay. I think the one part of my brain that was working, that was conscious, was I was so acutely aware of the sacrifice you'd both made to make sure I could do it. So I felt just in that moment, like despite the pain, I was just so overwhelmed with gratitude. I think that's why I kept crying, because I was just like, fuck, like these guys have stayed behind. They are literally supporting almost my entire body weight right now. Even though I was like hobbling, you took all my weight. We had videos of me at that section, which I've since watched back, and I've never seen myself in such a state. I've never heard myself make the noises that I made, which was like
that was wild.
Like every step, howling.
Every step wolf. Was like
it was like this.
Yeah.
That was like that. That was pretty much that for like an hour. Wild.
And it was crazy how seeing when you found rhythm in your breath, that's when you had power. Mm. And it was weird how it almost correlated to the terrain that we were walking on. So when it was really like rocky, rigid, you know, just uneven surfaces, I found that you found it hard to find the rhythm in the breath, because like two steps and then there's a big rock and it's not even. But when we were on the flatter boardwalk sections, even when it was still hilly, but just consistent ground, that's when you could really find the rhythm. And that's when you were just charging. And it was insane to honestly see you go from like the lowest, and then somehow you just managed to rally through that and came out stronger on the other side.
Because that was actually my lowest point, I reckon, after Manly, when we got to...
Thank you as well.
When we got to the bridge and we were like at Manly essentially. And I was like, yes, we're here. And then we got... I think I already said... I don't think Annie saw it because she was, you know, in her head and just focusing on the walk. But we got to a sign and it said 3.8 kilometers to go. And I was like, no freaking way. I thought we were there.
I remember that.
I thought we had like... 500 meters or whatever. And at this point I was like limping and I was like, this is all the drugs have worn off. I was in so much pain. And then I was kind of just like following behind you guys, just like limping. And I was like, 3.8, are you, I was running the math. And that's where I started running the math. I was like 3.8 at the speed we're going. That's like another 45 minutes. And I was prepared to tap out like then. Cause I was like, I thought we'd got there. I was like, yes, we're at Manly. I thought we had a few hundred meters left. That was probably my low. I was like, holy crap.
That's really where expectations get you killed.
Like,
you expect 500 meters. That's why for me personally, and I learned this through hiking, anytime I'm walking up a hill or whatever it is, I always tell myself, you know how like it goes around the corner? And you're most people are like, oh, I hope it's finished up there. I'm like, I hope it keeps going.
Mm.
And it's just that constant mentality. So when it does eventually finish around that corner, I'm pleasantly surprised. Yeah. But when it keeps going, I'm like, I wanted this. This is where I want to be. Like, so
setting up expectations.
When I'm seeing those kilometer signs, I'm like, nah.
Don't look at the kilometer signs.
I see 3.8. I'm like, give me 10. Like, just give me more. So that way I can mentally prepare for 10Ks. And then when it's 3.8, I'm like, oh, this is not what I expected. This is great. So yeah, I think always just set it further. Set your expectations way, way, way further.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember seeing the sign. I didn't say anything and nobody said anything.
I think we all saw it and nobody said anything.
We were all like, fuck. It was that communal like, fucking hell, 3.8. Yeah.
We're like, that's right, just keep going.
But I remember in that moment that like I remember my kind of inner coach came in there and I was like, all right, Annalise, you got two ways to look at this sign. You've got, fuck me, I've got another 3.8 to go. Holy shit. like that's another hour of walking, that's painful, I'm gonna like tap out. Or you've got how amazing, we've got 3.8 to finish this strong, like stay with your breath, this is the final push, this is the only opportunity that you have to make this count, like go. And I kind of fell into that, but I remember when we actually got to Manly, I remember that security guard came up being like, yo, is she okay? I think it was, to me, looking back on it, very powerful to observe, like, I wonder now, I question if I hadn't have made Manly Wharf the goal. I question if I'd have made the beach the goal and finished the last 10K, if I could have done it. Because considering that my body gave up at the Harbour Bridge, because that was my mental goal, and then my body gave up at the Wharf, because that was my mental goal, what if I'd made the final destination my mental goal? And to be honest, one of the main reasons I tapped out, the only reason I felt super sick was because my body caught up with the fact that I'd stopped. And it was like, okay, let's get it up.
Yeah, yeah.
But the main reason I didn't go through is because I was too slow. And I knew if I went with you guys, we weren't, the goal was to do it within 24 hours. And it would not have happened within 24 hours if I went. So I was like, all right, I'm done. And I was happy to, I was like, despite, sure, not being as fit and I could have trained better for it, I don't focus on that. I focus on the fact that, like, fuck, but I did it. Like, I chose to keep going and I got to the furthest that my mind and my body could take me at that point in time, which is really cool. What I love, the next morning, Dale and I woke up, he turns to me and he's like, so 100K next? And I'm like, yeah.
Hell yeah.
100K. And that's what I think is so beautiful about these challenges, is they're weirdly, and I'm sure you've experienced this, addictive. And Goggins talks about this, is when you find your physical and your mental limits and then you get there and then you ride this high of like, holy shit, like I got there. You then have that moment of, what else can I do?
Oh, totally. That was, you know, we talk about references empower you. Like every time you do get out of your comfort zone, you create a positive reference, hopefully positive. You create a reference that is going to help you do it more often, or you validate that belief or whatever it is. And I think that was the strongest example of a reference. I was like, man, I really feel like I can do anything now, especially because I was ready to tap out, not tap out, but I was feeling rough around 16.
Yeah.
And then halfway through, I was like, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't think I was going to finish it. Once my knee started playing up, I was like, oh man. Cause,
and you were in a lot of pain as well. Like you were walking backwards down hills. Like you were,
yeah, it was just like, and again, it was finding that balance. Is this genuinely going to injure me, or is it just, it's just some pain and I can push through it? But I do think it's a such an important point.
For sure. Like, and that's why, like, you really have to be intelligent as well. Like, as much as you need the Goggins, just, like, knuckle down and do
keep going.
You have to be intelligent, because, honestly, the key to all of this stuff, like, finishing any endurance event is, like, eat before you're hungry, drink before you're thirsty.
I remember when you said that.
Like, you need to fuel your body.
I forgot.
No, literally. And, like, even on that last section, I was, like, consciously trying to think, like, I need to get Annie to eat and also Dale to eat, and I also need to eat and drink. Because I'm like forward thinking, like, right, me, Annie stops at Manly Wharf, I need to keep going. That's another two and a half hours. Yeah. Like, I was like forward thinking so far. I was like, maybe I drive these two home to Woolloomooloo. I come back, like, I'm finishing this walk. I would finish it at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., whatever it took. And I'm like, if I'm doing that, I really need to be on with my food and like my drink. So fuel is the most important thing. It's what our body's running off. And there was literally a moment where you hadn't eaten in literally since I'd caught up with you guys. And then I'd like, I had a Snickers and you took like the smallest bite of a Snickers and it was wild how much that did for you. Like just that little bit of glucose just kept you going and it was noticeable.
I don't even remember that.
Wow.
I don't even remember having a Snickers.
Yeah, you took a bite. We were like, Annie, like, have the Snickers. Like, I feel sick, I can't. And we're like, just a small bite, do it.
You can do it.
Annie, you're not
you. You know what's so ironic? You know what's so ironic about that is I'm the biggest chocoholic, and the thought of me not devouring a Snickers at it being at my lips, like, that's insane.
But that's because I think you're just nauseous and probably like...
Oh, yeah. Well, you get to a state when you don't eat and you're so physically exhausted, you get to a state where you're just very nauseous and you're like, you're not hungry, but really you are hungry, but your brain's telling you you're not hungry.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone packs enough food.
You just can't digest it as well because like all the blood's in your muscles and like we need blood around our stomach to digest the food. So once all that's just built up in your muscles, the lactic acid, like that's why it's so hard to digest food. That's why on those events, you really just need like simple glucose that your body can just easily digest.
Yeah.
Hence the just sugar in the Snickers.
Yeah.
That's why I packed heaps of chocolate and stuff.
Yeah.
I was just pumping food all day.
Even then I could have packed more. I thought I packed heaps. I gave away a lot of my block of chocolate, which was a big sacrifice for me. Yeah.
Like, you gave it away.
Oh, I like so a block much. Of chocolate. I gave out like everyone took a row, and I was like, oh that's
it's one row left.
Yeah,
it was like two it's rows. Like with a gum, like a gum.
I was like, no.
Everyone's like, oh, awesome. Oh man.
Yeah. No, but yeah, we definitely could have prepared more. But I love being thrown in the deep end. Mm. I think it's a great, and I that's me personally. I think most people should. I think this generation needs to be thrown in the deep end a lot more. Mm. We're just pulling out way too much. Yeah. And it
sink or swim.
Oh, well, I'll do a bit of a rant now. Do you want to grab the battery from in there? Actually, I'll grab it. Never mind.
As in, like, continue to talk, or?
Yeah, you might as well actually be recording.
Okay. Yeah. Question for you. What are some big takeaways that you're going to take into the 100K?
Okay. So, firstly, be smart about food and pack the right kind of food and a lot of it and eat before I'm hungry and drink before I'm thirsty. So I'd say food and hydration was a big thing. Because I would argue if I'd have done that properly, I probably would have been more mentally aware and 100%, conscious.
100%.
Yeah. So that, I'm going to take away just one more step. Can I take one more step? Okay, go one more. I'm going to take away the fact that I went so much further than I thought I could when I thought I was at my low. And I think that's such a reference for me of, okay, well, when I thought I couldn't keep going, I kept going. So in the 100K, firstly, I feel like 70 is going to be okay because I've done it before. I feel like the real mental challenge will come in post 70 because that's what I haven't done before. So 75, 80, 85, 90. But I feel like for me, yeah, just like proper preparation. So like stretching, walking, food, hydration, making sure I'm actually prepared for it. The fact that I'd barely eaten the day before as well.
And slept.
Like, yeah. So all of that needs to be done properly. I'm going to remember just one more step. Can I take just one more step? Focusing on the small goals rather than the big ones. Get it to the end of the tree, get to the end of the road, get to the top of the stairs. That was a huge help. And then I think also just, yeah, remembering that I can do it. I feel like I've got such a narrative that physical endurance isn't for me, but I've fucking debunked that on Saturday of like, well, no, it can be 100%. It can be. And you know, you mentioned before the boy and girl thing, it may be, but there's a lot of incredible endurance female athletes.
Courtney DeWalter.
Yes. Courtney. I listened to her
ultra marathon runner, and she like beats guys in ultra marathons by like 10 hours plus.
So it's not a gendered thing at all. I think it is a mindset thing, but I think that the culture though. I was going to say the culture around endurance athletes is predominantly male. So, you know, I guess as women, we don't see ourselves represented as much. So we don't believe we can do it. Whereas now, what warmed my heart so much, and this is a big takeaway, me sharing my journey and my experience has inspired so many other people to get us outside of their comfort zone and to try. So I feel like a big takeaway for me is by you committing to a challenge and following through and building that trust in yourself, you also give others permission to do the same. And that's so powerful.
100%.
That was a big thing.
They're great takeaways.
Thank you. What were yours?
Takeaways for the next challenge. Just to reference Goggins again, he speaks of cookie jars. So like any hard thing you've ever been through in life, like that's a cookie in your jar. So when you're going through another hard thing, you can pull a cookie out of the jar and like use that to fuel you to keep going. For me, this is another cookie in the jar. Something I really have been kind of focusing on recently is like adding the intelligence to the David Goggins just grinding mindset. Was it intelligent to do this 80K walk with not much physical prep? No, it wasn't. Did I love it? Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. But I want to be able to do these things and like have my body react and respond in like a really good way. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to do these and then be out for a while. Like I want to do these and it betters me. It like allows me to grow from them.
It's like what you said, they're like good, consistently, great.
Exactly. So like my focus is just, okay, I really need to be good consistently.
Yeah.
Like I've done this great occasionally for quite a long time now. I need to be good consistently.
And what does that mean to you in terms of prep? What will you be doing?
Yeah, so in terms of prep, and the cool thing about this is all the challenges are really like really random. So how much can you really prep for the thing that you don't know what you're going to be doing?
Yeah.
But I know it's going to be in the endurance space. So for me, it just looks like trying to be like a hybrid athlete almost, like having muscle mass in my body to protect my joints, to give me strength throughout my daily movements, but then also having the endurance physically and the endurance mentally. And the way that looks like is running, swimming, cycling. That's the physical side of it. And then the mental endurance is doing the things you don't want to do every day. Mm. You know, walking 5 meters across the road to pick up a piece of rubbish that isn't yours. I don't know, getting out and helping someone or letting someone go in front of you in a line or just doing these little things each and every day. That's where the mental prep is.
Yeah, wow.
And yeah, they're just the things that I got to keep doing.
I love the cookie jar takeaway as well. I think that's really powerful.
No, it's great because when you're in the grind, like next, when you're on the 100K, maybe it's K45 and it really starts hurting.
I love that when you're on the 100K, not if.
Yeah, no, because you're doing it.
Yes, I am doing it.
Yeah, and maybe.
Who would ever say if?
Huh?
Who would say if?
No, but I feel like that's a common vernacular that we have when we talk about challenging things. It's like, oh, if I get the promotion, if I do that, if it's like speaking about it as a when is so powerful because it's an assertion of like, no, it will happen.
It will.
I love that.
Yeah. And like maybe the pain comes earlier. Maybe it's K10 and you roll your ankle and you're like, oh, damn, I didn't expect this.
Oh, damn, Daniel.
And it's like, now you're needing to pull into that cookie jar so much earlier. So you pull that cookie out. Like think about those hours. Think about how many steps you took when you didn't think you could go one more. Think about all of those. Those are all cookies. Yes. You can just munch on those all day.
Love cookies.
Yeah.
It helps that I do love cookies. So this is a great analogy.
But not Snickers.
Byron, what were your main takeaways?
My main takeaways or what would I do for the 100?
Well, the first question was takeaways. And then I guess what would you do for the 100 as well?
Main takeaways. Yeah, I guess stuff I already knew has just been validated in a more stronger, like this is all stuff I teach step by step, not living on the when I get to 80Ks. Like the thing is when you get to the 80K or the when you finish it, like we went to sleep. Mm. It's not like there wasn't really a reward. It was like you had to be internally like enjoying the journey. Mm. And so like finishing it was kind of miserable. It was kind of depressing. You threw up. I was stressed. We sat in the Uber quietly. We just went straight to bed. Mm. The fun part was doing the walk. Mm. Which was really, and so I think, you know, just the takeaway is just reinvigorating me to keep pushing the message, like doing the journey, just have fun doing it. Mm. If you're not enjoying it, you know, you're not going to enjoy it when you magically finish. And so just kind of doing that, obviously do a bit more prep, but also I'm happy that we kind of got thrown in. I like doing that way.
It's a good experience.
But yeah, I mean, there'd be a few things I'd prep more, be a bit more strategical with food, maybe.
Not give your chocolate away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I packed more food than anyone else and I still ran out. Mm. Like there was times where I was eating and no one else was eating. I was like, what's going on here? Like we got to be freaking.
Yeah.
I think that was a really foolish mistake.
I underestimated it.
On everyone. I just think we didn't pack enough food in general or prioritize timing to go to different spots. But, you know, that's fine. It's all part of the learning experience. But yeah. I mean, I guess the other takeaway was I thought I was going to give up at like 20Ks, yet I made it to 70. And so it's like the whole thing, it really is just keep pushing through. You know, I thought Annie was going to give up at the Harbour Bridge and then she finished.
Yeah.
And so it's just seeing that with her, with everyone, with myself, playing what was going on in my mind, seeing myself use you guys who didn't look injured as an excuse. I caught myself doing that. I was like, no, why am I doing that? But what would I do to prepare for the 100 kilometers? I guess everything I just said, but... I had a good point, but I think I've forgotten it.
Can I let you simmer on that? Because I have something to say that you mentioned. I'll save you. You mentioned something really interesting to me, which was like, oh, you finished and then you were so depressed and it was over. One thing I think is so important with things like this or with any kind of achievement is you got to celebrate them. I just want to quickly touch on what my routine was like after Saturday in order for this to be something that I look back on and I'm like, far out, I'm proud. Sunday was a lot of gratitude journaling. So it was a lot of reflecting on the experience. I journaled the whole thing. So it was all written down so I could really get through all my thoughts, everything that was on my mind that I remembered from the experience that I wanted to capture. And then I did the gratitude journaling of like, all right, well, what were the moments that I'm so grateful for now that I may not have recognized in the moment? The fact that the last part of the walk was pitch black and I could only see what was in front of me. I'm so grateful for that because if I saw the whole walk, I probably would have given up because it was so far away till the finish line. And then a lot of self-care. And, you know, the saunas and, you know, all that. So I think celebrating achievements is so important so that you don't get that low afterwards of like, oh, well, it's finished, I'm done. And I think that's a really important part to include in any challenge that you do because it makes it rewarding and it makes it worthwhile and it makes it memorable as well.
Yeah, totally celebrating.
I have a question for you both.
I've got my takeaways here, actually.
Okay, yeah.
I wrote them down. Anyway. I forgot. Oh, this is my journal. I mean, this is like
we'll get your question a while after.
Ago. Yeah.
This is in my journal, lessons I learned. I caught myself playing victim when my knee was playing up. The other boys didn't have the issue and seemed fine. And I kept saying the reason they will finish this is because they didn't get a bad knee like me, which is true. But how does that benefit me? I'm still my own race, and the others were still struggling. I now realize. Number two, the mind is powerful. Of course, I knew this, but seeing it in action was amazing. Seeing how far we can push through it, it gets incredible. I thought I was done by 16 kilometers, but I managed to make it to 70. Step number three, baby steps. The distance we traveled was wild. The Harbour Bridge was a tiny dot at the beginning, yet 8 hours later, we were walking across it. Just one step at a time is how you achieve a massive goal. Number four, I learned a lot about my body, and I'm very proud I didn't give up. I couldn't have done it without the crew, as we all held each other accountable. My legs are still sore and injured, but I got through it, and in hindsight, it really wasn't that bad. If you minus the injuries, it is all just mental game and physical pain of the legs, but you get used to your legs basically become numb. I'm very glad I did this and keen to push myself further. And I guess the thing I was thinking for the 100 kilometers, and a huge thing for me is like, for me personally, I'm like, I did this when my knee was really sore. I'm like, man, if I can somehow train to avoid that from happening, it'll be so easy.
Mm.
Like, can you imagine walking it without the pains?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, for me, if I removed the knee pain, the only pain was just the numb legs. And you get so used to it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, I feel like I could walk forever if I didn't have that injury. So now I've got this confidence. If I can somehow do some stretches or work on my knee so it doesn't play up, I think I'll be able to crush the 100 kilometers.
The only thing there is, if that knee pain's gone, in those moments, whatever pain you have, that is 100 for you.
Mm.
So whether it's like, say you have the knee pain and a blister, and the knee pain's overruling the blister, take that knee pain away, that blister is now 100%. So in those things, like your mind, as it weakens, like as you fatigue, you're always going to find like something that is so hard about it. Whether even if it's just like the sound that your pants make as you walk, like little things are going to annoy you. So there's always going to be something to combat. And I think again, like hiking up a hill, just hoping that the hill keeps going, just know always there's going to be something that's on your mind. Just like, I really hate this. Yeah, the question I was going to ask you guys is, so like you both are going to do 100 kilometers and like I will at some point.
I mean, we said we'll do 100, we need a more flatter environment, so it's more practical. But yeah, totally.
The question is like, now, if you were to wake up tomorrow if you were to wake up on the day of the 100 kilometer and every single person on earth was dead, just let's say, would you still do it?
Yeah, I would. I think I would. And the reason I would, it's interesting, if you asked me this before the 80K, I would have said hell no.
I think a better question would be if no one knew you were doing it and you couldn't tell anyone, would you still do it?
Yeah, I would.
I just take those questions too literally.
Yeah.
Like, why would I do that if everyone else is dead?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're looking for internal.
Yes, then drive, you're like, right? You're doing it for yourself because
Like
that's the most important thing. It's like posting things on Instagram, Garmin watches, anything like that, tracking your activities. You need to come back to like, why are you doing it? What's the purpose? So if you can do it and not tell anyone, that's great. Then you know why you're doing it. So
like, it's an audience of none concept.
Yeah, no, 100%.
What would you do to an audience of none? Would you walk 100 kilometers if you couldn't tell anyone, if you didn't get to wear it as a badge, if you couldn't do a 1.5 hour podcast telling everyone how amazing you are afterwards? No, but
No, it's
such a good question.
Yeah. Look, it's interesting how I would have responded to this 5 years ago when I was very ego driven. I feel like I've come a long way. There's so much I've done in the past 2 years that nobody knows about and they don't need to know. It's like, it's not for people. One of the things that genuinely changed my life was going to therapy. And the reason that changed my life was because it was something I paid for that I committed to show up for just for me. Nobody else heard the conversation. Nobody else knew of my pain. Nobody else knew of what I was going through. Nobody else knew the lengths I was going to fix myself and to heal myself. That was a personal journey and a personal struggle. That mental and emotional discipline it takes to go through that on your own when you don't have a support network is really tough. So the idea of doing 100Ks on my own, I know would be challenging, but it's also so exciting because it's like, it's that same concept of far out. If I did 100Ks on my own, I'm literally limit. Like what can't I do? It's like that, it's that overwhelming sense of like, holy shit, my whole world has just opened up to me. I could build a boat. I could get on that boat and sail to Morocco. I could then start a business in Morocco and then learn a language. Like,
this is why getting out of your comfort zone is so important, because you create these references where you go,
yeah, it's the confidence.
If I could do this, that's why I was saying, like, if I could walk 80 kilometers with a bad knee, what could I walk if I didn't have a bad knee? Or what could I do, whatever, right? And that's where it's like, oh, if I can get up on stage in front of 200 people, what else can I do?
Yeah.
And it's those little things that keep the hope alive.
Yeah.
I think the big issue is people will never get out of the comfort zone and never start having those little things. And they compare themselves to someone who's doing something huge. But how do they get to that huge spot? They did thing after thing after thing. And then they had the confidence to do this massive thing. It wasn't just they magically had the confidence. Yeah. They did the walk. Then they did this and they did this and this. Yeah. And now they have the confidence.
I think that it all comes back to intention. Are you doing it for a badge of honor or are you doing it for yourself, for something, for a deeper reason?
Yeah.
And I feel like I said, like when I was younger, and look, I'm honest about it. I'm not proud about it. But like I was a very egotistical young woman and I was only focused on how intelligent I was and how much I studied. And, you know, that for me was a badge of honor. And I wanted everybody to know how hard I was working because that was my validation for my worth. But we've come a long way since that.
That's actually a huge thing in modern society, showing people how hard you work. Mm. And for me, because I used to have that mentality as well. But now I'm just like, I want to show you how little I work. Because it's like, really, it's like, why is working hard at a job? Like, you're just stuck in the rat race. You're just stuck in the trap. Like, you're working for, like, what are we doing here? Yeah. It's like, I want to live an incredible life and work as little as possible. I think it's a much better goal than having to work 90. People like, I work 80 hours a week. I'm like, bro, what the hell? That's not a flex.
The only thing that scares me about that question, though, if everybody was dead, what if something really bad happens? And what if you need help or a medical emergency? Or I think that's the risk that you run, right?
You'd prepare for it, though, if you're doing a solo. You'd have like a satellite phone.
I'll just mend my own knee, strap my bone back together.
And I think that's where it comes down to like knowing yourself. And like one of the other big takeaways I got from this was, I don't want to get too comfortable doing these things with people. I've always been huge on like seeking discomfort and doing that, like true discomfort is by myself. So when I go out hiking solo, that is really, really uncomfortable. Yeah. I'm out there for 3-4 days at a time, whatever it is. And it's so different when you're with your own thoughts for 3-4 days. No phone, no nothing, no stimulus, just nature, which is a stimulus in itself, I guess. But that changes so much when you have a buddy there, when you have someone to talk to, someone to bounce ideas off. And the thing with this is like the walk was awesome. It was so much fun. And I loved it. And yes, it was hard, but I just know how much more difficult it would be if I did it by myself. And
way harder.
And that's where I never want to get too comfortable knowing that I can just always do it with people. Yeah.
But I think if I'd done this walk, I don't think I would have finished it by myself because I would have got too caught up with the injuries and stuff. But now knowing that I can do it, I could do it by myself because I've done it with you guys.
Yeah.
So I think doing it with a group is great, but if I wanted to do it solo, I think I definitely am way more confident than I was originally.
Yeah, I think it's super important just like, and this is like quite an extreme scale, but something as small as like going for a walk for an hour with no stimulus, like no phone, no music, no dog, no friend. Just sit with your thoughts for an hour. And for most people, that's really uncomfortable. Yeah. Like that's quite a big discomfort. But there's just so much you're going to get from that. So much you're going to get from that. I think, more people need to spend time by themselves.
Yeah, it's like very intentional mindfulness over a prolonged period of time. Yeah, wow.
We get to a point where like all the immediate rabid thoughts in your head just dissipate and you can't think about anything else and you have to start thinking about like other bigger things and like really having a talk within yourself, which is beautiful.
Yeah, it's where all the questions come up, like what am I doing with my life?
I mean, it's like going? When Dale got back from England and he was like, had all these ideas because he'd walked for 2 weeks and he was just like, I had nothing else to think about. So I was like, I'm doing this. Totally.
Yeah, and you battle the demons as well because we're like, I don't know, I might be thinking about how sore my foot is and then Annalise walks next to me and is like, oh, like, how beautiful is the Harbour Bridge looking right now? Like, had you not have been there? And like, I just made that up. But like, had you
I did not go up to him and say, how beautiful is the Harbour Bridge? I was too consumed in my own pain.
But like, had that not have happened in that moment, let's say, then I would have just been with my foot pain.
Of course.
And that would have grown bigger and bigger and it like becomes like an overwhelming cloud of just pain, which leads to doubt. And then like that can lead to you not finishing what you started.
But that's what doing it solo forces you to have to deal with that on your own, which is a skill within itself. And I mean, a great example is like I ran my business solo for the first 3 years and now I have Byron and Pace, which is with Dale. And it's such a different experience doing it with someone. Like it's so much easier, so much more enjoyable doing it with someone. But I developed a lot of strengths and a lot of like hardship having to do it by myself.
Yeah.
Because I had no one to lean on. I had no one to talk to.
Yeah.
And so I think there's advantages and disadvantages to having people around you. But then also being by yourself is also important. Again, it's the balance.
Yeah. It's almost like you got two options. Either go on a really long week hike by yourself or try and start a business by yourself. Yeah. You get the same mental discipline and whatnot from either one. They're both very challenging. So
For sure. Yeah, no, just find the middle ground. Find something that works for you. I think like everything needs to be practical. Like we're living life. Like we're moving around. It has to be practical. So take these lessons and just try to apply them to to your own life. Like whatever it is on the smaller scale, whether it's, I don't know, something as simple as like watering the garden bed that you hate doing. Just like go and do that. And like maybe just look at a plant and like look at the details and sit with that thought and see where that leads. Just do different things and just be practical about it.
But unpacking, I guess, how it all happens. Just do it. Book it in. You know what I mean? Like how long could we have just sat on, oh, we should do the Bondi to Manly walk. Oh yeah, we'll do it in 3 months. Oh, I'm busy. It never happens, right? Just lock it in and just commit to doing it. Yeah. It's probably the first step, right? And throw yourself in the deep end. Like throw yourself in the deep end, find some good people to do it with. I mean, it was just going to be me and you originally. And then I was like, oh, Dale can come. And then like, I got some friends. And then Annie, and suddenly we had a group of 6 people. But originally I thought it was going to be me and you and maybe Dale. And so, yeah, just do it, book it in, like make the commitment. Don't hesitate. There's a great Will Smith video. You know, we talked about skydiving. And I totally back that. It's in the hesitation where people don't get to where they want to be. And I've had this with my program, man. You know, people hesitate. They're like, oh, should I do it? And of course, I'm biased because I want them to sign up. Mm. But it's like, just back your decision, empower you as well. It's like, oh, I might not come. Just do it. Back your decision. One of the biggest sliding door moments in my life, Annie saw it. Oh, I don't even seen this, Annie. How I became an Empower You speaker. I did a little talk on that. And there was a moment where I signed up to go to an event, a free event in the city, and I was living 45 minutes out in the suburbs. And I woke up on Saturday, and I forgot about the event at 7 a.m., and I got a text message that said, hey, Byron, just a reminder, the event's happening at 9 o'clock. We'll see you soon. And I completely forgot about it. And I was like, oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go. And it changed my life because now I met all these people through that one moment. And I think it's in the hesitation where, as you mentioned, you didn't know about it long enough to think on it.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing. Probably prepare more than we did.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And again, this is all metaphorical for whatever you want to do. And then just get out of your comfort zone. See it as a challenge. View it as a good thing. Focus on the one step at a time. It's a journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
All these things that have nothing to do with a walk, but everything to do with life.
Yeah.
And whatever it is you're trying to achieve. This whole talk is a metaphor. We're talking about a walk, a literal walk, but it applies to everything.
There's a great concept called the flinch. And I can't remember who it's by. I just tried to Google it then, but I wasn't fast enough. But the whole idea is like, before you're about to get into a cold shower, your body flinches, right? Mm. And his whole concept is obsess over the flinch.
Right.
Fall in love with the
flinch.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's a good one, yeah. Like, that's really good.
Fall in love with the flinch because that is when you're about to do something really cool.
Yeah.
And you train your body to enjoy that process and be excited for that process, and you replace the fear with excitement.
And that's what I love about presenting. Cool. You can't flinch while presenting. I mean, you can, but if you do, you've lost so much power. Like you just cannot afford to be like, oh, up, up, bang. You've just lost immediate, a huge amount of power. You've lost a lot of the room. You've just got to back your decisions. And even presenting, you say something that's wrong or you stuff up, you don't say something, you just got to back it. You can't be, oh, sorry guys, let me re-say it again. Oh, I didn't mean to say that. You can't flinch, you can't hesitate. You've just got to like, be if you want to be a good presenter and back it. And I love that pressure of having the audience there and you can stuff up, but you don't have like even right now, I'm thinking I'm taking my time because it's just not a live podcast.
Well, to me, it just all comes back to trust. Like trust in yourself. Like with presenting, trust the words will come out the way they should. When you're walking, trust that I can make it to the end of the road. Like when you develop that trust in self, like that serves you for the rest of your life. So look for opportunities every day where you can build that trust over time.
And just trust it's going to be what it's going to be. Like none of us are perfect. We're all going to
set expectations.
Don't set those expectations. Just roll with it. And it's how you respond. Like, say you stuff up on stage, it's how you respond to that stuff up.
100%.
You freeze and you're like, and then the room's lost, or do you just go, accept that? Okay, let's move. Like you keep rolling with it.
Yeah.
And another thing about like being under that pressure in those hard situations, like doing the walk makes everything in life that much easier.
Mm.
Like,
it's the whole thing. Like once you've done one really hard thing, you go, what can I do next? Mm.
But it's also like the daily stresses. Like, I don't know, you drop your lunch at work and all your food's gone. Like, damn, that really sucks. Maybe that's the hardest part of your day. But the day before, you just walked 80 kilometers, so it's really not that bad,
is
it?
In the grand scheme of things,
So
it puts things into perspective.
I think a final lesson would be, like, put yourself in a position where you don't have any exits. Like, if you did a walk with people that were, I mean, I don't like to use this word, but softer, easy exit, right? Everyone could have fed off each other and gone, oh, we've made it 60 kilometers. You know what? That's an incredible achievement, because 60 is an incredible achievement. But then also, like, I mean, Annie, you mentioned, like, women in the bush. It's like, I wanted to give up, but I couldn't, because we're in the bush. Mm. You can't just back out.
Mm.
Like, unless you want to call a helicopter or something, which is not going
to
happen.
Look, I think there's two sides to that. I think for somebody to jump into doing 80Ks like we did immediately would be a massive fear. And that would be something that would be completely just like, it would terrify everything inside of them. I think there is merit in doing things gradually and slowly and building your confidence over time. If you are somebody who is willing to take the plunge and you have the support network and you have, you know, the discipline to do that, then do that. But I honestly believe there is equally as much merit in taking your time to get to that destination and to build that confidence. Like, you've got your whole life. It's like, it's Atomic Habits. It's the 1%. Mm. So it's like, if you want to do bite sizes at a time, you can. Amazing. If you want to do it all in one go, okay, remarkable, incredible. Would I advise people to do what we've done? I don't know if I would, honestly. Like, train for it. Take food.
I would.
Like, it's an amazing experience.
But what's the worst that happens?
But this is the thing. If you don't see the value in doing it.
People don't see it until they do it.
No, but this is the thing. Like, I would argue that we have a specific mentality where we see the value in doing things that are very uncomfortable.
For sure. But this is what I mean, which means the other people who don't have that need to do it even more than us because they don't see the value. That,
but they're not going to do it because they don't see the value. I'm saying is the baby steps then are valuable because you're training yourself over time to push yourself into discomfort, to build that muscle and then get to the big goal. And that I'm saying it's, yeah, doing it over time is equally as valuable as diving into it immediately.
Yeah,
it's still achieving the same goal.
I think, like, on Annie's point as well, those are the people that when you say, like, oh, I just walked 80Ks, their response is like, why would you do that? Those are the people that see no value in doing it. So mm-hmm. It's like those people really need to start small, like walk around the block, then just slowly build up.
Yeah,
I agree. I just think this generation needs a ripcord pull out. The amount of interviews I've done and the pivotal moment was when they got ripped out. Mm-hmm. Fabio is fucking living a sick life because COVID ripped him out of his job, which he never would have left. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of us need a slap in the face. I agree. The whole reason we started this was because me and mum were doing 10-kilometer bits of this walk.
Well, look,
so I do think it's valuable if they do actually commit to it and they do small steps.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will try and maybe give up or they won't get into it. I do think it's merit and just doing something incredibly hard and just ripping yourself out of that.
I would agree. You can't argue the merit, but like, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make a drink. So unless somebody sees the inherent value in doing it, I argue they wouldn't actually get the value out of it because they're doing it because I was told to do it.
Mm.
You know, so I think there's a lot of merit in building that mental discipline over time of learning the value of discomfort over time and then being able to seek excitement and enjoyment and want to pursue those opportunities because that's where the real reward and the richness comes in and that's how your life can feel more fulfilling. And
it's just different kinds of people. Like, some 100%. People love jumping in the deep end. Some people like twiddle their feet in the shallow end and then slowly work their way in. So it's just whatever works for you. Yeah. But just don't say no to it. Say yes. Like, that's the pivotal moment because we all have the opportunity to say no. Remember when I pitched the idea to Pat? I was like, hey, Pat, what are you doing? What date was it? Like Saturday, it was. I was like, what are you doing on this day? And he's like, nothing. And I'm like, cool. Do you want to do a really challenging, difficult thing that's going to be great for you? And he's just like, yeah, sure. And then I told him what it was. And it's like that moment, he could have said no, or he could have said, no, just tell me what it is. I'm not going to say yes until I know. He just said yes, unknowingly. Like, he trusted me, obviously. Mm. But it's that ability to say yes that got him to the other side. Mm. So that ability to say yes that is going to allow him to grow and learn from all these situations in life.
Totally.
So yeah, just start saying yes.
I do think the dream situation is what I need to say. They get into that mindset and everything. I just see a lot of people aren't getting into that mindset. And I don't know. I've been talking like this for a while, but I just think this generation, young people, if they get an easier option, they'll take it. Mm. Until they hear you saying, just take baby steps or do this, they'll take it. And I just think, no, the lesson from this is get out of your comfort zone, rip yourself out, do something that's wildly out of there. Because I just know they're not going to take baby steps. I know young people. They won't. There's a whole reason. I mean, some people will.
Yeah.
But on general, empower you, maybe 0.5% ever implement what we teach. Mm. We do the whole bank account thing. We just to give them all this list, how many people actually do it?
Yeah. Well, look, I would argue everything I say with the work that I do is everything's awareness. And I think the way that people are the way that they are is because it's conditioning and it's habit. And so I would argue that a lot of young people, sure, they may not see the value in it, but that's because they're conditioned to not pursue it or to see the value in it entirely. So, you know, I think, like you said, the takeaway is, sure, if you get the opportunity to do it, don't say no. Mm. Say yes, go for it, take a bunch of friends, tell us if you do it, like obviously reach out, that would be amazing to hear. But I think, like we spoke about before, what are the little bits of discomfort that you can do every day that can push you out of your comfort zone so you can challenge that relationship with discomfort and you can grow to becoming a version of yourself that maybe you didn't even know was possible.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's the ideal for sure. If they can start doing that, Definitely. That's why we push the comfort zone message so far.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of like, it's easy to pull a bunch of friends together on like one big thing rather than doing lots of little things. So I think it's, if you want to do it with people, like I love the way we did it, was just so, we got a few people, we're doing this big thing and then going on from there. It's tangible, it's easy to organize. The baby steps are more like you've got to be doing it yourself. But yeah, it's got to be a combination of both. And ultimately, the only way to success is through baby steps.
Yeah.
Like success is just habits compounded over time. You want a big goal, it is the baby steps. But I think the good thing about the walk is I love the ripcord. It's like it can just be a big awakening thing for a lot of people. It was awakening for me, and I already had that mindset. I can imagine if someone who didn't came along with us, I think they would have got so much out of it.
Sure.
Whether they had the right mindset, I think we would have forced it on them and they would have seen it. They might have hated it at the time, just like we hated different parts of the time. But in hindsight, I think they would have got a lot out of it.
And it's almost try to surround yourself with the kind of people that would say yes to something like that.
Mm.
I think Goggins talks, just Goggins always. But Goggins, he talks
By the way, I'm going to preference who David Goggins is in the intro so people know. Because we haven't clarified who he is yet. So I'll do that in the intro.
Well, if you don't know who he is, start listening to him. Listen, he's amazing.
Yeah, he speaks a lot about being uncommon amongst like uncommon men. And not to that full extent of like, not everyone has to be uncommon amongst the uncommon, but rather try to surround yourself with the uncommon. Like there's a lot of common folk out there, like in ways we're all common, but the common person would say no to walking 80Ks from Bondi to Manly, right? So it's easy for you not to do it when you're like, none of my friends want to do it. Nobody I know wants to do it. Everyone just says it's a crazy thing. Why would I do it? Find that person. Find that person that's going to do it.
I wouldn't have done it without, like I wouldn't have done it solo. Like no way. I wouldn't have had it because I didn't, there's no reason to do this. It was purely just a challenge. And that's why I pitched to you and Dale, because you were the two guys I knew who would say yes immediately.
Yeah. So it's find those people, and like anyone that says, I don't know anyone, you can literally ask me. Like anyone listening to this.
Yeah, in Sydney, for sure. Yeah,
like I will say yes to that.
Yeah.
Because again, it's just trying to find those uncommon people can be hard for quite a lot of people. But again, like you said earlier on, like start doing other things, whether it's like joining a social club or like getting a part-time job somewhere, just meet different people, because that's how you're ultimately going to find out new experiences and new things in life.
And I mean, going back to the scooter club thing, right? Join a club with a common, to find a hikers group or something. And the thing is, I don't know how to find these groups. This is why I started my whole program, because it's really hard to find these groups. Yeah, a little plug right there. But yeah, totally. It's just really finding those people make it a lot easier in every aspect of your life. Not just physical stuff, but like it's every great as aspect. Well,
because again, you're not always going to be the one to come up with the idea. It might just be as simple as one of your mates saying, hey, I want to do this. Like they might be the person that pulls the ripcord.
Mm.
So, yeah. Well,
look, I'm extremely proud of us. And I think it was an amazing feat. And anybody wants to do it, do it.
Yeah.
100%. Then for the next one as well.
100K is, yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, I reckon, maybe I'm just getting too confident again.
Don't put it on the record.
I just feel like I could do 100Ks easier than the last walk we did.
Now with that preparation.
Yes, because I can prep for it. I know what to expect.
If it's flat terrain as well, it's going to make a huge difference.
You'd have to do flat. I don't think you could do
but
it.
But don't anchor yourself to that. Again, like it comes back to the expectations.
Yeah.
The more you anchor yourself to, it's going to be easier, it'll be so much harder. Mm. Like, I learned this firsthand. So when I hiked the Larapinta, which is a trail in the middle of Australia, 12-day hike, 240Ks, we were looking, like we had a preview of each day. Adam, my mate that I did it with, and day two was like the flattest day of all. It was, I think, 28Ks long. And we just told ourselves from day one that was going to be the easiest day of the whole walk. It was the hardest day. I woke up day two thinking this is going to be the easiest day. And it was by far the hardest day. Not because of the terrain, just because I mentally told myself it was going to be easy. When you're walking 28Ks
with
30 kilos on your back, it is not easy. It's hard. So again, like take those expectations out and just...
Well, that was the good thing for me, because it was so loosely organized and I was swamped. I was working, I had so much on, I didn't really think about it. I didn't even look at it on the map. I didn't look at the elevation. I knew it was 8 kilometers. I'd done a little bit of the walks with my mum. I was like, I didn't overthink it too much, which again, I think is, so I didn't have any expectations. I was like, I was excited.
Which
I'm
is
like,
great.
I'm just going to walk this. I was overly confident because I've never walked long distance, so I didn't know what it would do to my body. And every time I'm like, I can walk quite easily.
And what a blessing for that, just saying. That's one of the things I gratitude on the Sunday was like, how fucking incredible that despite the pain that like we can actually do this.
Oh, it's amazing.
Like that's, I think, a huge thing to be grateful for.
I mean, Goggins, again, he says when you're at 100% capacity, he believes, not scientifically proven, you're only at 40%, which I back.
I
mean, that was almost the math for me.
Yeah, I back it too.
Oh, yeah, I backed it first.
Well, first is the worst, second is the best.
Well, I mean,
now it's a fact.
I backed it. I mean, like, I hit 16, 20 kilometers and I was like, yeah, I think I'm done, which is like 40% of the walk. So it was literal, same with you. Mm. But I mean, again, goes in every aspect of life. Mm. The program even, man, I wanted to give up. I mean, you know, you two know a little bit, but the first program had everything go wrong, where it's like, just push through it. It'd be amazed, business, life, whatever it is, you'd be amazed how far you can get. So that's a good lesson there.
And above all else, in the pain, find something to smile about.
Yeah, find the joy.
I mean, that was what we're talking about.
Like, even if it's smiling at the thought of me throwing up and passing out, I don't mind. You can borrow it.
Yeah. Never stop smiling.
Yeah.
Because that's when all the joy is gone.
It's true. It is true. Like, if we had everyone there start getting real down and stop cracking jokes and having conversations and stuff, gone.
Yeah.
Mm. That just multiplies. Yeah. Game over, yeah.
And I almost think that's what's beautiful about doing things in nature. Because nature, I find, always gives me a reason to smile. Mm. Like, I'm never in nature and I can't not smile. Like, it is so beautiful. Yeah. And when you look at, like, the sunrise we witnessed, the sunset, the bush, the trees, like, the kookaburras we saw, like, all of those are just so beautiful.
It's funny.
That's where I lost it in the dark, when I just had my headphones in and I was just listening to this podcast and I could only see, like, mud in front of me. That's where I started to lose the happiness.
Yeah, I was going to, I'll start very quickly. I was in yoga this morning and we're doing a very hard move and the instructor says, now find your smile. Where's your smile? That's internally, I'm like, fuck you, woman. Like, I don't want to smile. But it's the point of, like, find the joy in the movement and find the happiness and the ease and the relaxation. And it works. Like, it really does. So
it's joy in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when I came downstairs for the beginning of the walk and you were there and we're just like, yeah, let's do this.
Literally. Yeah, like 3 a.m.
Yeah,
just
with no sleep.
3:30, Annie comes down just like,
oh. I'm like, oh my God.
But that's it, like, hyping it up, getting excited. So there is joy in everything. But yeah, I mean, this has been an awesome podcast, probably two parts.
Woo.
Let's work for me.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Any final thoughts from you guys?
Just challenge yourself. Like, do the thing that you didn't think you could do. Mm. At least try it. Like, dare to try. Dare to be great.
Yeah. I would consider myself a common human and I didn't think I could do it. Mm. So let that be your confidence that you can too.
I mean, that's a growth and fixed mindset, right? It's like a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is, oh, I can't do that walk. Mm. A growth mindset is, I can't do that walk yet. It's like, everyone, you can do so much. Like, you'd be amazed what you can do.
Yeah. We believe in you.
Honestly, you can do so much physically, mentally.
Go get that sexy activewear and go do it.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, guys, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been a really cool episode.
Thanks for having us.
It's been so fun.
It's nice to document this as well. I think this is very special to be able to look back on.
I'm keen to listen back to this, like, post 100K.
Yeah. Ooh. See what's changed.
We'll do a 100K one for sure as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Wherever we do that. If anyone knows any good spots, let us know. But yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast. Her speaking coach on Instagram. That's Annalise. You want to find her?
That's me.
Josh, where do they find you?
Josh Van Sweden on
Josh
Instagram.
Josh Van Sweden, yeah.
And Two Guys, One Car as well.
Two Guys, One Car is your podcast, which is kind of around vulnerability and a bit more masculine and stuff.
Yeah. So really enjoying doing that stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we'll get Josh on the podcast very shortly for a solo episode to go more into his story. All the links will be in the bio. But otherwise, guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Peace.
Bye. Ooh.